17. A pattern. Dull form dread, with the mind most lost, the lowest, and one not bright. To find this form one need banish the cost, it finds you and brings you to blight. From the Listener's Song of Listing, final stanza. Riding on her wagon, Shallan covered her anxiety with scholarship. There was no way to tell if the deserters had spotted the trails of crushed rock buds made by the caravan. They might be following. They might not be. No use dwelling on it, she told herself. And so she found a distraction. The leaves can start their own shoots, she said, holding up one of the small round leaves on the tip of her finger. She turned it toward the sunlight. Bluth sat beside her, hulking like a boulder. Today he wore a hat that was entirely too stylish for him, dusty white, with a brim that folded upward at the sides. He would occasionally flick his guiding reed. It was at least as long as Shallan was tall, on the shell of the chull ahead. Shallan had made a small list of the beats he used in the back of her book. Bluth hit twice, paused, and hit again. That made the animal slow as the wagon in front of them, driven by Tevlakov, began moving up a hillside covered in tiny rock buds. You see? Shallan said, showing him the leaf. That's why the plant's limbs are so fragile. When the storm comes, it will shatter these branches and break off the leaves. They will blow away and start new shoots, building their own shell. They grow so quickly. Faster than I'd have expected out here in these infertile lands. Bluth grunted. Shallan sighed, lowering her finger and putting the tiny plant back in the cup she'd been using to nurture it. She glanced over her shoulder. No sign of pursuit. She really should just stop worrying. She turned back to her new sketchbook, one of Yasna's notebooks that didn't have many pages filled, then began a quick sketch of the small leaf. She didn't have very good materials, only a single charcoal pencil, some pens, and a little ink. But pattern had been right. She could not stop. She had begun with a replacement sketch of the Santhid as she remembered it from her dip in the sea. The picture wasn't equal to the one she'd crafted right after the event, but having it again, in any form, had started healing the wounds inside. She finished the leaf, then turned the page and began a sketch of Bluth. She didn't particularly want to restart her collection of people with him, but her options were limited. Unfortunately, that hat really did look silly. It was far too small for his head. The image of him huddled forward like a crab, back to the sky and hat on his head. Well, at least it would be an interesting composition. "Where did you get the hat?" she asked as she sketched.
"Traded for it," Bluth mumbled, not looking at her.
"Did it cost much?" He shrugged. Shallan had lost her own hats in the sinking, but had persuaded Tevlakov to give her one of the ones woven by the parchman. It wasn't particularly attractive, but it kept the sun off her face. Despite the bumping wagon, Shallan eventually managed to finish her sketch of Bluth. She inspected it, dissatisfied. It was a poor way to start her collection, particularly as she felt she'd caricatured him somewhat. She pursed her lips. What would Bluth look like if he weren't always scowling at her, if his clothing were neater, if he carried a proper weapon instead of that old cudgel? She flipped the page and started again. A different composition. Idealized, perhaps, but somehow also right. He could actually look dashing once you dressed him up properly. A uniform. A spear planted to his side, eyes toward the horizon. By the time she'd finished, she was feeling much better about the day. She smiled at the product, then held it up to Bluth as Tevlakov called the midday halt. Bluth glanced at the picture but said nothing. He gave the chull a few whacks to stop it alongside the one pulling Tevlakov's wagon. Tag rolled up his wagon.
He carried the slaves this time. Knobweed, Shallan said, lowering her sketch and pointing at a patch of thin reeds growing behind a nearby rock. Bluth groaned.
More of that plant?
Yes, would you kindly fetch them for me?
Can't the parshman do it? I'm supposed to feed the chulls.
Which would you rather make wait, Guardsman Bluth? The chulls? Or the light-eyed woman? Bluth scratched his head underneath the hat, then sullenly climbed down from the wagon and walked toward the reeds. Nearby, Tavlakov stood on his wagon watching the horizon to the south. A thin trail of smoke rose in that direction. Shallan felt an immediate chill. She scrambled from the wagon and hurried to Tavlakov.
Storms, Shallan said.
Is it the deserters? They are following us?
Yes. They have stopped to cook for midday, it seems, Tavlakov said from his perch atop his wagon. They do not care about us seeing their fire.
He forced out a laugh.
That is a good sign. They probably know we are only 3 wagons and are barely worth chasing. So long as we keep moving and don't stop often, they will give up the chase. Yes, I'm Zatan.
He hopped down from his wagon, then hurriedly began to water the slaves. He didn't bother to make the parshman do it. He did the work himself. That, more than anything, testified to his nervousness. He wanted to be moving again quickly. That left the parshman to continue weaving in their cage behind Tavlakov's wagon. Anxious, Shallan stood there watching. The deserters had spotted the wagon's trail of broken rock buds. She found herself sweating, but what could she do? She couldn't hurry the caravan. She had to simply hope, as Tavlakov said, that they could stay ahead of pursuit. That didn't seem likely. The chull wagons couldn't be faster than marching men. Distract yourself, Shallan thought as she started to panic. Find something to take your mind off the pursuit. What about Tavlakov's parshmen? Shallan eyed them. Perhaps a drawing of the two of them in their cage? No. She was too nervous for drawing. But perhaps she could find something out. She walked to the parshman. Her feet complained, but the pain was manageable. In fact, in contrast to how she'd covered it up on previous days, now she exaggerated her winces. Better to make Tavlakov think she was less well than she was. She stopped at the cage's bars. The back was unlocked. Parshman never ran. Buying these two must have been quite an investment for Tavlakov. Parshmen weren't cheap, and many monarchs and powerful light eyes hoarded them. One of the two glanced at Shallan, then returned back to his work. Her work? It was difficult to tell the males from the females without undressing them. Both of these two had red-on-white marbled skin. They had squat bodies, perhaps 5 feet tall, and were bald. It was difficult to see these two humble workers as a threat. What are your names? Shallan asked. One looked up. The other kept working. Your name? Shallan prodded.
One, the parshman said.
He pointed at his companion.
Two.
He put his head down and kept working. Are you happy with your life? Shallan asked. Would you rather be free, given the chance? The parshman looked up at her and frowned. He scrunched up his brow, mouthing a few of the words, then shook his head. He didn't understand. Freedom? Shallan prodded. He hunched down to work. He actually looks uncomfortable, Shallan thought, embarrassed for not understanding. His posture seemed to say, please stop asking me questions. Shallan tucked her sketchbook under her arm and took a memory of the two of them working there. These are evil monsters, she told herself forcefully. Creatures of legend who will soon be bent on destroying everyone and everything around them. Standing here, looking in at them, she found it difficult to believe, even though she had accepted the evidence. Storms. Yasna was right.
Persuading the light eyes to rid themselves of their parchment was going to be nearly impossible. She would need very, very solid proof. Troubled, she walked back to her seat and climbed up, making sure to wince. Bluth had left her a bundle of knobweed and was now caring for the chulls. Tavlakov was digging out some food for a quick lunch, which they'd probably eat while moving. She quieted her nerves and forced herself to do some sketches of nearby plants. She soon moved on to a sketch of the horizon and the rock formations nearby. The air didn't feel as cold as it had during her first days with the slavers, though her breath still steamed before her in the mornings. As Tavlakov passed by, he gave her an uncomfortable glance. He had treated her differently since their confrontation at the fire last night. Shallan continued sketching. It was certainly a lot flatter out here than back home, and there were far fewer plants, though they were more robust. And was that another column of smoke up ahead? She stood up and raised a hand to shade her eyes. Yes. More smoke. She looked southward, toward the pursuing mercenaries. Nearby, Tag stopped, noticing what she had. He hustled over to Tavlakov, and the two started arguing softly. Tradesman Tavlakov? Shallan refused to call him Trade Master, as would be his proper title as a full merchant. I would hear your discussion.
Of course, Brightness, of course.
He waddled over, wringing his hands.
You have seen the smoke ahead. We have entered a corridor running between the Shattered Plains and the Shallow Crypts and its sister villages. There is more traffic here than in other parts of the Frostlands, you see. So it is not unexpected that we should encounter others.
Those ahead?
Another caravan, if we are lucky.
And if we're unlucky? She didn't need to ask. It would mean more deserters, or bandits.
We can avoid them, Tavlakov said. Only a large group would dare make smoke for midday meals, as it is an invitation, or a warning. The small caravans, like ourselves, do not risk it.
If it's a large caravan, Tag said, rubbing his brow with a thick finger, they'll have guards. Good protection.
He looked southward.
Yes, Tavlakov said. But we could also be placing ourselves between two enemies. Danger on all sides.
Those behind will catch us, Tavlakov, Shallan said.
Aye.
A man hunting game will return with a mink if there are no telm to be found, she said. Those deserters have to kill to survive out here. Didn't you say there was probably going to be a high storm tonight?
Yes, Tavlakov said, reluctant. 2 hours after sunset, if the list I bought is correct.
I don't know how bandits normally weather the storms, Shallan said. But they've obviously committed to chasing us down. I'd bet they plan to use the wagons as shelter after killing us. They're not going to let us go.
Perhaps, Tavlakov said. Yes, perhaps. But Brightness, if we see that second column of smoke ahead, so might the deserters.
Yeah,
Tag said, nodding, as if he'd only just realized it.
We cut east. The killers might go after the group ahead.
We let them attack someone else instead of us, Shallan said, folding her arms.
What else would you expect us to do, Brightness? Tavlakov said, exasperated. We are small Kremlings, you see. Our only choice is to keep away from larger creatures and hope for them to hunt one another.
Shallan narrowed her eyes, inspecting that small column of smoke ahead. Was it her eyes, or was it growing thicker? She looked backward. Actually, the columns looked to be about the same size. They won't hunt prey their own size, Shallan thought. They left the army, ran away. They're cowards. Nearby, she could see Bluth looking backward as well, watching that smoke with an expression she couldn't read. Disgust? Longing? Fear? No Spren to give her a clue. Cowards, she thought again. Or just men disillusioned. Rocks who started rolling down a hillside, only to start going so quickly they don't know how to stop. It didn't matter. Those rocks would crush Shallan and the others, if given the chance. Cutting eastward wouldn't work. The deserters would take the easy kill, slow-moving wagons, instead of the potentially harder kill straight ahead. "We make for the second column of smoke," Shallan said, sitting down. Tevlakov looked at her.
"You don't get it."
He broke off as she met his eyes. "You..." Tevlakov said, licking his lips.
"You won't get to the Shattered Plains as quickly, Brightness, if we get tied up with a larger caravan, you see. It could be bad."
"I will deal with that if the problem arises, tradesman Tevlakov."
"Those ahead will keep moving," Tevlakov warned. "We may arrive at that camp and find them gone."
"In which case," Shallan said, "they will either be moving toward the Shattered Plains, or coming this way, along the corridor toward the port cities. We will intersect them eventually, one way or another." Tevlakov sighed, then nodded, calling to Tag to hurry. Shallan sat down, feeling a thrill. Bluth returned and took his seat, then shoved a few wizened roots in her direction. Lunch, apparently. Shortly, the wagons began rolling northward, Shallan's wagon falling into place third in line this time. Shallan settled into her seat for the trip. They were hours away from that second group, even if they did manage to catch up to it. To keep from worrying, she finished her sketches of the landscape. She then turned to idle sketches, simply letting her pencil go where it willed. She drew sky eels dancing in the air. She drew the docks of Carbronth. She did a sketch of Yalb, though the face felt off to her, and she didn't quite capture the mischievous spark in his eyes. Perhaps the errors related to how sad she became, thinking of what had probably happened to him. She flipped the page and started a random sketch, whatever came into her mind. Her pencil moved into a depiction of an elegant woman in a stately gown, loose but sleek below the waist, tight across the chest and stomach, long open sleeves, one hiding the safe hand, the other cut at the elbow, exposing the forearm and draping down below. A bold, poised woman, in control. Still drawing unconsciously, Shallan added her own face to the elegant woman's head. She hesitated, pencil hovering above the image. That wasn't her, was it? Could it be? She stared at that image as the wagon bumped over rocks and plants. She flipped to the next page and started another drawing. A ball gown, a woman at court, surrounded by the elite of Alethkar as she imagined them. Tall, strong, the woman belonged among them. Shallan added her face to the figure. She flipped the page and did another one, and then another. The last one was a sketch of her standing at the edge of the Shattered Plains as she imagined them, looking eastward, toward the secrets that Yasna had sought. Shallan flipped the page and drew again. A picture of Yasna on the ship, seated at her desk, papers and books sprawled around her. It wasn't the setting that mattered, but the face. That worried, terrified face. Exhausted, pushed to her limits. Shallan got this one right. The first drawing since the disaster that captured perfectly what she'd seen. Yasna's burden. "Stop the wagon," Shallan said, not looking up. Bluth glanced at her. She resisted the urge to say it again. He didn't, unfortunately, obey immediately.
"Why?"
he demanded. Shallan looked up. The smoke column was still distant, but she'd been right. It was growing thicker. The group ahead had stopped and built a sizable fire for the midday meal. Judging by that smoke, they were a much larger group than the one behind. "I'm going to get into the back," Shallan said. "I need to look something up. You can continue when I'm settled, but please stop and call to me once we're near to the group ahead." He sighed, but stopped the chul with a few whacks on the shell. Shallan climbed down, then took the knobweed and notebook, moved to the back of the wagon. Once she was in, Bluth started up again immediately, shouting back to Dvlakov, who had demanded to know the meaning of the delay. With the walls up, her wagon was shaded and private, particularly with it being last in line so nobody could look in the back door at her. Unfortunately, riding in the back wasn't as comfortable as riding in the front. Those tiny rock buds caused a surprising amount of jarring and jolting. Yasna's trunk was tied in place near the front wall. She opened the lid, letting the spheres inside provide dusky illumination, then settled back on her improvised cushion, a pile of the cloths Yasna had used to wrap her books. The blanket she used at nights, as Dvlakov had been unable to produce one for her, was the velvet lining she had ripped out of the trunk. Settling back, she unwrapped her feet to apply the new knobweed. They were scabbed over and much improved from their condition just a day before. "Pattern?" He vibrated from somewhere nearby. She'd asked him to remain in the back so as to not alarm Dvlakov and the guards. "My feet are healing," she said. "Did you do this?"
I know almost nothing of why people break. I know less of why they unbreak.
"Your kind don't get wounded?" she asked, snapping off a knobweed stem and squeezing the drops onto her left foot.
"We break. We just do it differently than men do. And we do not unbreak without aid. I do not know why you unbreak. Why?"
"It is a natural function of our bodies," she said. "Living things repair themselves automatically." She held one of her spheres close, searching for signs of little red rotspren. Where she found a few of them along one cut, she was quick to apply sap and chase them off.
"I would like to know why things work," Pattern said.
"So would many of us," Shallan said, bent over. She grimaced as the wagon hit a particularly large rock. "I made myself glow last night, by the fire with Dvlakov."
"Yes.
Do you know why?"
"Lies."
"My dress changed," Shallan said. "I swear the scuffs and rips were gone last night. They've returned now, though."
Yes.
"I have to be able to control this thing we can do." Yasna called it light weaving. She implied it was far safer to practice than soul casting.
"The book?"
Shallan frowned, sitting back against the bars on the side of the wagon. Beside her, a long line of scratches on the floor looked like they'd been made by fingernails, as if one of the slaves had tried in a fit of madness to claw his way to freedom. The book Yasna had given her, Words of Radiance, had been swallowed by the ocean. It seemed a greater loss than the other one Yasna had given her, the Book of Endless Pages, which had strangely been blank. She didn't understand the full significance of that yet. "I never got a chance to actually read that book," Shallan said. "We'll need to see if we can find another copy once we reach the Shattered Plains." Their destination being a war camp, though, she doubted that many books would be for sale. Shallan held one of her spheres up before herself. It was growing dim and needed to be reinfused. What would happen if the high storm came and they hadn't caught up to the group ahead? Would the deserters push through the storm itself to reach them? And potentially the safety of their wagons? Storms, what a mess. She needed an edge. "The night's radiant formed a bond with Spren," Shallan said, more to herself than to Pattern. It was a symbiotic relationship, like a little kremlin who lives in the shale bark. The kremlin cleans off the lichen, getting food, but also keeping the shale bark clean. Pattern buzzed in confusion.
I the shale bark or the kremlin?
Either, Shallan said, turning the diamond sphere in her fingers. The tiny gemstone trapped inside glowed with a vigilant light, suspended in glass. The surges, the forces that run the world, are more pliable to Spren. Or, well, since Spren are pieces of those surges, maybe it's that the Spren are better at influencing one another. Our bond gives me the ability to manipulate one of the surges, in this case light, the power of illumination.
Lies, Pattern whispered, and truths.
Shallan gripped the sphere in her fist, the light shining through her skin making her hand glow red. She willed the light to enter her, but nothing happened. So, how do I make it work?
Perhaps.
Eat it? Pattern said, moving over onto the wall beside her head.
Eat it?
Shallan asked, skeptical. I didn't need to eat it before to get the stormlight.
Might work, though. Try?
I doubt I could swallow an entire sphere, Shallan said. Even if I wanted to, which I distinctly do not. Pattern said, his vibrations making the wood shake.
This is not one of the things humans like to eat, then?
Storms, no. Haven't you been paying attention?
I have, he said, with an annoyed zip of a vibration. But it is difficult to tell. You consume some things and turn them into other things, very curious things that you hide. They have value, but you leave them. Why?
We are done with that conversation, Shallan said, opening her fist and holding up the sphere again. Though, admittedly, something about what he said felt right. She hadn't eaten any spheres before, but she had somehow consumed the light, like drinking it. She'd breathed it in, right? She stared at the sphere for a moment, then sucked in a sharp breath. It worked. The light left the sphere quick as a heartbeat, a bright line streaming into her chest. From there it spread, filling her. The unusual sensation made her feel anxious, alert, ready, eager to be about something. Her muscles tensed. It worked, she said, though when she spoke, stormlight, glowing faintly, puffed out in front of her. It rose from her skin, too. She had to practice before it all left. Light weaving. She needed to create something. She decided to go with what she'd done before, improving the look of her dress. Again, nothing happened. She didn't know what to do, what muscles to use, or even if muscles mattered. Frustrated, she sat there trying to find a way to make the stormlight work, feeling inept as it escaped through her skin. It took several minutes for it to dissipate completely. Well, that was distinctly unimpressive, she said, moving to get more stalks of knobweed. Maybe I should practice soul-casting instead. Pattern buzzed.
Dangerous.
So Yasna told me, Shallan said. But I don't have her to teach me anymore, and so far as I know, she's the only one who could have done so. It's either practice on my own or never learn to use the ability. She squeezed out another few drops of knobweed sap, moved to massage it into a cut on her foot, then stopped. The wound was noticeably smaller than it had been just moments ago. The stormlight is healing me, Shallan said.
It makes you unbreak?
Yes. Stormfather! I'm doing things almost by accident.
Can something be almost an accident? Pattern asked,
genuinely curious.
This phrase, I do not know what it means.
It's mostly a figure of speech. Then, before he could ask further, she continued, "And by that I mean something we say to convey an idea or a feeling, but not a literal fact."
Pattern buzzed.
"What does that mean?" Shallan asked, massaging the knobweed in anyway, "when you buzz like that. What are you feeling?"
Excited. Yes. It has been so long since anyone has learned of you and your kind."
Shallan squeezed some more sap onto her toes.
"You came to learn?"
"Wait. You're a scholar?"
"Of course.
Why else would I come? I will learn so much before—"
He stopped abruptly.
"Pattern?" she asked.
"Before what?"
"A figure of speech."
He said it perfectly flatly, absent of tone. He was growing better and better at speaking like a person, and at times he sounded just like one. But now all of the color had gone from his voice.
"You're lying," she accused him, glancing at his pattern on the wall. He had shrunk, growing as small as a fist, half his usual size.
"Yes," he said reluctantly.
"You're a terrible liar," Shallan said, surprised at the realization.
"Yes."
"But you love lies."
"So fascinating," he said. "You are all so fascinating."
"Tell me what you were going to say," Shallan ordered, "before you stopped yourself. I'll know if you lie."
You sound like her. More and more like her. Tell me."
He buzzed with an annoyed sound, quick and high-pitched.
"I will learn what I can of you before you kill me."
You think I'm going to kill you?"
"It happened to the others," Pattern said, his voice softer now. "It will happen to me. It is
a pattern."
"This has to do with the Night's Radiant," Shallan said, raising her hands to start braiding her hair. That would be better than leaving it wild, though without a comb and brush, even braiding it was hard. "Storms," she thought. "I need a bath and soap and a dozen other things."
"Yes," Pattern said. "The knights killed their spren."
"How? Why?"
"Their oaths," Pattern said. "It is all I know. My kind, those who were unbonded. We retreated, and many kept our minds. Even still, it is hard to think apart from my kind unless—"
"Unless?"
"Unless we have a person."
"So that's what you get out of it," Shallan said, untangling her hair with her fingers. "Symbiosis. I get access to surge binding, you get thought."
"Sapience," Pattern said. "Thought. Life. These are of humans. We are ideas. Ideas that wish to live."
Shallan continued working on her hair. "I'm not going to kill you," she said firmly. "I won't do it."
"I don't suppose the others intended to either," he said. "But it is no matter."
"It is an important matter," Shallan said. "I won't do it. I'm not one of the Knights Radiant. Yasna made that clear. A man who can use a sword isn't necessarily a soldier. Just because I can do what I do doesn't make me one of them."
"You spoke oaths."
Shallan froze. "Life before death." The words drifted toward her from the shadows of her past, a past she would not think of.
"You live lies," Pattern said. "It gives you strength. But the truth, without speaking truths,
You will not be able to grow, Shallan. I know this, somehow.
She finished with her hair and moved to rewrap her feet. Pattern had moved to the other side of the rattling wagon chamber, settling onto the wall, only faintly visible in the dim light. She had a handful of infused spheres left. Not much stormlight, considering how quickly that other had left her. Should she use what she had to further heal her feet? Could she even do that intentionally? Or would the ability elude her, as lightweaving had? She tucked the spheres into her safe pouch. She would save them, just in case. For now, these spheres and their light might be the only weapon available to her. Bandages redone, she stood up in the rattling wagon and found that her foot pain was nearly gone. She could walk almost normally, though she still wouldn't want to go far without shoes. Pleased, she knocked on the wood nearest to Bluth. "Stop the wagon!" This time she didn't have to repeat herself. She rounded the wagon, and taking her seat beside Bluth, immediately noticed the smoke column ahead. It had grown darker, larger, roiling violently. "That's no cook fire," Shallan said.
"Aye," Bluth said, expression dark. "Something big is burning. Probably wagons."
He glanced at her.
"Whoever is up there, it doesn't look like things went well for them."